This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 25th of May, 1965. The title of this lecture is The Five Conditions. This tape is 90 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Thank you. What's the date? 25 May, A.D. 15, St. Hill Special Briefing Course, a meter with a gray face. Isn't that interesting, looking meter? All right, I have a little bulletin to give you. A couple bulletins. And one of those bulletins is that Mary Sue is late today. Now, there's a rumor going about that if you're being processed in the HTC as a student, you can't come to lectures, something like that. That's false. Let me give you a clue. This is the little bulletin you have. I'll give you a clue on the way we have to operate in Scientology. If it isn't written, it isn't true. And you just put that down, you get along fine in organizations and every place else. If it isn't written, it isn't true. Somebody says this, that, and the other thing. You say, well, you got it in writing. And they say, well, no, as a matter of fact, I think, well, it isn't true, and that's that. This, by the way, had to come into being. The first place I know of it was when we were down at 2600 Hoover in Los Angeles in 1950, and people used to walk in off the street and said, Ron said to give me 50 hours of processing or something like that, and by George, they would. There's very often some misunderstood statement or a rumor line or something like this is passed on verbally, and frankly, even if it was uttered verbally, it should have been in writing. So once more, if it isn't written, it isn't true. You find out that when things are moving very fast, a whole bunch of verbal orders will get mixed up in the thing that other people aren't aware of, and suddenly, why, nobody in the organization can agree with anybody else because the verbal orders are standing in the road of everything, and it just all breaks down. So you have to have that rule, and you have to make it stick. Now, the other one is that St. Hill had to be declared in a condition. Now, a declaration of a condition is something new, and you will soon find it applying to the course. And the bulletins are all practically written, the policy letters are all practically written on this, but I haven't had a chance to finish them up or sign them or something of the sort. But we've been using this, nevertheless, for some little time, and that is strictly a condition. Is an operating state. Organizationally, it's an operating state. And oddly enough, in the Nest universe, there are several formulas connected with these operating states. And if, for instance, England, the British government knew these, or the United States government knew these, they wouldn't get into very much trouble. But as it is, they don't know them, and they get into a great deal of trouble. There are apparently certain formulas which have to be followed in this universe, or you go appetite over tin cup. I'll give you an idea of the emergency formula. The emergency formula, of course, we're more accustomed to being in a state of emergency on this planet than we are in any other state. And nevertheless, there is a certain way that you handle an emergency. And an emergency status is declared simply and only by a down statistic. That is to say, the statistics went down. It doesn't matter what statistics. If they were supposed to go up and they went down, why, that's an emergency. Now, the reverse can take place. The reverse can take place. Let's take the number of students in a unit. Let's say it keeps going up. And it goes going up. And it doesn't go down. Do you see? Then, obviously, the students aren't being graduated from the unit at the same rate they're being put into the unit, so there must be a slowdown in that unit of some kind or another, so that will create a state of emergency, too. So it's the desirable statistic has not been attained. And the statistic which should go down goes up, or the statistic which should go up goes down. Now let's take the gross income of an organization at large. That has to do with a drop. And it's a consistent drop. 1 week we don't pay any attention to. 2 weeks we start paying an attention to. 3 weeks, well, then we jolly well pay an attention to it, don't you see? And if it consistently does this in an organization, and shows down for four consecutive weeks, we declare them in a state of emergency. Now, the declaration is issued by Secretarial Executive Director, which is a positive order. In other words, it's a written posted order. People are not left in the dark concerning this state of emergency. You just had a unit on this course go into a state of emergency. Now, there's several policy letters connected with this, which I won't particularly bother to delineate, but there are certain actions which one has to undertake when a state of emergency is declared. The first of these actions is well, you can say, promote. That applies to an organization. To an individual, you'd better be, say, produce. That's the first action. Regardless of any other action, regardless of anything else, that is the first thing they have to put their attention on. Very often you will find out that at the moment that the emergency was noticed, let's take you, you find your money is going downhill at a great rate, and you're not getting as much money in as you should have been getting in, and there's less and less money, and so forth. Well, you actually are in a state of emergency. Now, the proper thing to do, according to Mr. Vilson, a Satan that wandered in from someplace, well, he did. He had an ambition to end Britain, and that's libel and slander, so we have to cut it off the tape. But anyway, he really made the statement. He says England should be a fourth-class power, and he's making his possible. You didn't know that he said that? Oh, yes, ma'am. That's a matter of publicized public statement made right after leaving the United States before he was elected. Anyhow, he's making it. But now you see he finds the organization called the government in a poor state economically. So he economizes. The United States government does this all the time. As soon as they find out that their treasury balance doesn't equal their squid-a-woof and the ideas of the Secretary of the Treasury that he's just got from the first cell of the Communist Party or wherever it is, or wherever they get their ideas, the United States government, you know, runs its economics today straight off Karl Marx, Das Kapital. If you don't believe it, read Das Kapital if you can. That sounds awfully rabble-roused and very extreme, but it happens to be a very banal statement. It's even been noticed by the Wall Street Journal. The formula of economics in Das Kapital is from each according to his ability to pay, and to each according to his need. Socialism. That's the formula of taxation contained in Karl Marx's Das Kapital, written about 1879, something like that. See? And the governments of the world are following this today. And these capitalistic governments are having a ball with this. Well, now, supposing when they find that they're going broke, they economize. Supposing they take that as their first step. Every time they recover from an emergency, they will be smaller and less able. If that's all they do, do you follow? They have violated this actual formula of emergency. There is an actual formula of emergency. It does exist in this universe. It's in the woof and warp of the universe itself, and its first line is, the first broad, big action which you take is promote. You better jolly well promote. And that carries with it, on the part of an individual or factory, the idea that he better make his intentions known, and so on. Now, after you've promoted, and after you've got that well in hand, you economize. But you have to do that first. Don't worry about economy. Bother about promoting. Exactly what is promotion? Well, look it up in the dictionary. It's making things known. It's getting things out. It's getting oneself known, getting one's products out, or something like this. In the form of an artist, the idea, he finds his statistics are shot. He suddenly looks up one day and the bank balance is down to nothing and that sort of thing. And the landlord is camping on the first landing and so forth. Well, he must first and foremost promote. He better take those three Academy paintings that he was busy dabbling with, and he better sit up all night long, finish those things real fast. He better wrap up all those other paintings that he'd already finished. He better get them off to a gallery awful quick, and he better call up a press boy of some kind or another and say, I am having an exhibition. See, and it didn't matter how many pounds, shillings, or pence he had to borrow to make the phone calls or put the ad in the paper or get some literature printed that he was having an exhibit. He said, it didn't matter. Promote, man. Let's get it up there. Let's get it out there. Let's get the line straightened up. See? Now economize. Follow? And then, I'm giving you the very rough formula, and then he's got to prepare to deliver. Now, he actually during his promotion, could have sold a half a dozen paintings. Well, then he economized, and then he paints them and delivers. You got the idea? So it's in that action. And when you find your statistic is down, you first have to promote. And when you got your promotion well in hand, then you better economize, and then you jolly well better prepare to deliver. And that's the 1, 2, 3. If you do it backwards, you've had it. Now, there's another condition known as affluence. And this is one of the most dangerous conditions there is, and nobody recognizes it as such. Let's take some fellow on the south side of the northeast side of lower Chicago. And he's always been going along with 25 cents in his pocket. That was about the most money he ever had in his pocket. And all of a sudden, he gets in a crap game. And he wins $10,000. Well, what's his normal operation? I remember a famous movie Victor McLaughlin played in that showed a beautiful rendition of this. It was The Informer. And he's paid a huge sum of money for turning in one of his fellow Irish Republican Army soldiers. And he just blows this, don't you think? What a marvelous example. The first impulse somebody gets when they get that much is to get very rich indeed. So what's this fellow on the lower east side of South Chicago's lower north side? What's this fellow do? He buys himself a house, the future payments of which are going to be $175 a month. Buys himself a car, the future payments of which are going to be. He's got all the down payments for these things. You see, he buys himself a watch. He lays out a bunch of clothes that he doesn't need. And he neglects to pay off anybody that he owes. And $10,000 is gone. He now owes another $20,000. And he hasn't got a prayer of paying that off. He's violated the condition of affluence, and the state of affluence formula has been definitely and wildly violated. Now, the first thing you must do in affluence is economize. Just right now, you got 10,000 bucks, you didn't expect it from any place, you didn't know it was going to be there, and so forth. Just quickly cover it up with your hat and economize. Say, where are we wasting money? Bang. You must just at once. And then make very, very, very sure that you don't buy anything that has any future commitment to it. Don't buy anything with any future commitments. Don't hire anybody with any future commitments. Nothing. See, that's all part of that economy. Clamp it down. Get every bill that you can possibly scrape up from any place, every penny you owe anywhere under the sun, moon, and stars, and pay them. Pay every bill. Your next big broad step. Pull everything down in all directions until you've got it down to as close to zero as you can get, or zero. Now, invest the remainder in service facilities. Make it more possible to deliver. Okay, service facilities. And part of the formula is to discover what caused the condition of affluence and strengthen it. You see? Move your operation or what's your life or you're doing and so forth slightly over so that it admits this zone and area of affluence. Now, if you do those things, and so forth, life will look like a dream. But you notice that the condition of emergency, if handled at the beginning with economy, would inhibit getting out anything in order to produce enough money to raise the statistic. So if you went into a condition of emergency and economized instantly, you either might always remain in this condition of emergency, Or if you recovered from it, you would find your organization was smaller, or you were smaller, or you had less scope. Because you have applied the state of affluence formula to the condition of emergency. All you've got to do is misapply one of these formulas. Be in condition B and say you're in condition A, or continue in condition A when you have moved into condition D. In other words, be operating on the wrong formula, and you wrap the organization up. You wrap it up. And part of the emergency formula, since these things will be published in great detail, actually it's about 13 steps to one of these formulas, there are certain major points. These are the ones I'm taking up. If, for instance, you went into a condition of emergency and then you didn't change after you'd promoted, you didn't make any changes in your operation, well, you just head for another condition of emergency. See? So that has to be part of it. You better change your operating basis. You better do something to change the operating basis, because that operating basis led you into an emergency, so you sure better change it. But affluence, you must have been doing something awful right to get in that much money. Well, you jolly well better discover what it is. That's the search that you go into at its proper numbered slot. You go into a search and overhaul anything and review it all after you provided some service facilities and you're straightened up, and that's the end of all of that big kettle of money that came in. Then you just better look. What the devil did cause this? Because you may have the wrong idea of what caused it. It might have been a complete fluke, or it might have been this or that, but you better hunt and research and look at it and watch it very carefully and say, yes, that's because I, well, it's a case of a painter, you see, that's because I started being nice to editors and painters and art gallery people's wives. That was that program I went out on last month. I'll be nice to the hostess. So after this, I'm always going to be nice to the hostess, don't you think? Oh, it works like a bomb. See? Gorgeous. After that, nice to the hostess. Conditions of affluence happen every now and then. You know, it would be some screwball thing of this particular character. You might have thought that it was because the world was suddenly more conscious of art. I had nothing to do with it. Until somebody can define what art is, the world is not likely to become more conscious of it. So here's a case where you could go into an operating condition unknowingly, pay no attention to it, keep running as though you were in another operating condition, and all of a sudden just go appetite over tin cup. The whole thing just crashes, and you don't quite know what happened to you. It's all a big mystery. But if you know these operating formulas, of which, by the way, there are five, why, you're jolly well off. The lowest, most basic of them, and the most snarly one, is the condition of emergency. When you're in a state of emergency, boy, that's snap and pop. Well, now, part of a condition of emergency, it contains this little line of, you've got to stiffen discipline, or you've got to stiffen ethics. To an individual, this would simply mean, well, not go down to the pub every Friday night, you know. Let's stiffen up the discipline. Let's stay home and grind the midnight oil away. Let's stay home and do one's homework or something. You get the idea. Discipline stiffened up. Be a little more regular on the job, work a little harder, something of this sort. So you don't goof quite so much, don't make so many mistakes. This would be part of that operating action. And as a net result, organizationally, when a state of emergency is assigned, supposing the activity doesn't come out of that emergency, regardless of what caused the emergency, supposing the activity just doesn't come out of the emergency, in spite of the fact that they have been labeled state of emergency, they have been directed to follow the formula, they have been told to snap and pop and get that thing straightened out, and they're still found to be goofing, the statistic is going down and continues to go down and so forth, what do you do? There's only one thing left to do, and that's discipline. Because life itself is going to discipline the individual. Life itself is going to discipline the individual very cruelly and savagely. Living in another age, in a less socialistic period, why, the net product of it was starving to death. In a business, why, it'd be going into bankruptcy. See? It's a crash situation. And it usually winds up in an ethical situation. A fellow who's starving to death will quite normally steal. Bankruptcies wind up in bankruptcy court. It becomes an ethical situation whether one likes it or not. You've got justice staring you in the teeth. So, the rule of the game is that if a state of emergency is ignored and the steps are not taken successfully, do you understand not taken successfully is different than not taken? And the condition is continued, then you get an announcement after a while that the condition has been continued. And if the condition is continued beyond the specified period of time, that's it. It has to walk forward into an ethics matter. Because how else could you straighten out that activity? There must be somebody goofing like crazy sitting on most of the comm lines. Do you see? You've got some ethical problem involved with it. There's somebody who won't function. You see? There's somebody who's got the brakes on so that you can hear, smell them smoke. And so you walk forward into an ethical situation. Now, the state of normal operation is the second condition, and that is supposed to be just normal operation. It means not stability. You could call it a condition of stability, and it probably should be called a condition of stability, except for this one little factor. This universe does not admit of a static state. Not using our definition of the word static, but it won't admit a no increase, no decrease. You cannot have a condition in this universe where there is no increase and no decrease. That's a totally stable condition. There is no such thing in this universe, from one end of it to the other. There isn't anything. It always remains the same. You take some of the hardest substances there are, which oddly enough is plutonium and some other such elements. Those things diminish, you see, or explode. You take lead, you say, well, lead will stay there a long time. Well, I invite you to look at the lead on some churches and so forth, and you find out that it's diminishing. As hardy as the element is supposed to be, it's still diminishing. And you take a tree or a body, after it attains its supposed size and so forth, why, it actually doesn't have a long period of an absolute plane. You see, it's either increasing, 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 and when it goes into that plane and so forth, you'll find out that it's really decreasing. So the very old people have actually shrunk in size. You understand, I'm not talking about this from the viewpoint of it is right. I'm just saying this is the way the universe is rigged. I'm giving you some laws that I managed to strip out of this universe, and where the agreement of beings and their interlockings of organizations and materiel and that sort of thing, where these things function, you'll find out they're governed by these universal laws. It's quite interesting because they completely knock out economics as we have known it. And they supplant a different operating basis for economics. We don't expect to be teaching anybody these things, particularly. But we certainly are interested in using them ourselves. They're very valuable data. The condition of normal operation, then, is not one of stability. And therefore, I'm not going to call it stability. Although it's probably supposed to be called stability. Because it can't be. Normal operation must be a routine or gradual increase. And there must be a regular, routine, gradual increase. And if there is no gradual increase, there will not be a condition of stability. You cannot have a total, even state of existence which does not eventually fall on its head. The second you get this even state in this universe, it starts to deteriorate. So a state of stability would eventually deteriorate. Well, to prevent a deterioration, you must have an increase. That increase doesn't have to be spectacular, but it has to be something. There has to be a bit of an increase there. Well, the way you maintain an increase is when you're in a state of normal operation, you don't change anything. You don't change a blessed thing. You just let it go. And you're very benign about the whole thing. Ethics are very mild. The justice factor is quite mild and quite reasonable, don't you see? There's nothing very desperate going on, you see. There's no savage actions taken particularly. People come to sitting around in an old shirt or something like that. Well, let them sit around in an old shirt. Maybe that has part of the increased statistics. I'm not sure of it. But don't go plowing around. Now, what you do is you very carefully examine every slightest rise in a statistic. Every time a statistic betters, let me put it more accurately, every time the statistic betters, then look it over carefully and find out what bettered it, and then do that. That's the only changes you make. And every time a statistic worsens slightly, quickly find out why and remedy it. And you just jockey those two factors, the statistic bettering, the statistic worsening. Repair the statistic worsening, and you'll find out inevitably some change has been made in that area where a statistic worsens. Some change has been made. You better get that change off the lines in a hurry. And when you find that a statistic is bettering, something like that, you better find out how it is bettering. You very often find out it may depend on an individual. You've maybe got a new person on some post or something like that, and they're doing extremely well, you see. Well, one of the ways to better it is pat them on the back and hold them up as an example, don't you see? Give them a little bump in pay, something of this sort, don't you see? But increase that statistic. We sent out a mailing, or we've done something, or we've approached somebody, we've talked to a different type of person recently, and suddenly our statistic is a little bit better. Well, we'd better add it up very carefully that we talked to this type of person. And without abandoning what we were doing before, also do this other one. Do you see? And therefore, you will find that your statistic, it just keeps bettering, and the worsening statistics tend to fall away. And you just keep riding this horse on that sort of a jockey basis. It's just a very nice, it isn't a lazy operation, it's a very alert one. You watch your statistics. Now, let me give you an example of how I speak of this organization. Of course, we have OIC boards and that sort of thing to watch statistics by. And everything has to be staticizable. That is, so you've got to be able to get a statistic on anything, anywhere in an operation. If you can't, why, it's all on rumor and God knows what all, and you very soon will have you in trouble. Maybe your own life is only in trouble because you don't staticize it. Very seldom does a clerk, for instance, ever look at his pay as a statistic. If some fellow, for instance, has been getting nothing but that same paycheck, now, for the past 2 or 3 years, that's a state of emergency. You follow? Although the statistic hasn't dwindled, that's the other way you can get into a state of emergency, because sooner or later that's going to dwindle. That's going to crash. You never saw anything quite so silly. We've got a couple of organizations which never rise and never fall. And sure enough, after about 2 or 3 years of never rising and never falling, one of them had a hysterical cable in here the other day that it couldn't pay its rent. See, oh, well, it, without anything dramatic occurring, it had gotten itself into an emergency. The statistic hadn't even visibly declined. It was just the fact that here was this line. Level, 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 level. No increase over these years. Whew. All of a sudden, bang! It's into some kind of a state of emergency that has sneaked up on it, you see? The state of emergency that would sneak up on it to somebody that had a gross income across here happens to be in the woof and warp of the universe itself. You have things like inflation. Things become less valuable. So if you had the same income, it won't buy as much. And actually, that was a declining statistic. Do you follow? I mean, although it looked level, it was really declining. The civilization around it was growing, so it didn't have the relative importance to the civilization around it that it should have had, see? So it wasn't really level at all. And all of a sudden, there it is in an emergency, can't pay its rent. So the individual clerk who has been dragging down X number of dollars per week over the past 3 years and has had no rise of any kind whatsoever, no rise, no prospects of a rise or anything like that, does not realize that he is looking at catastrophe. He thinks he's looking at security, the idiot. But for sure, if he has had no change of any kind in pay status for that period of time, he's looking at a personal emergency. If only because inflation itself will catch up with him. His 25-cent pieces now don't buy as many cigarettes as they used to, so it's actually a declining statistic. In the expansion of the world around him and the crowd that he is moving with and so forth, their statistics are changing and his isn't. There's more recreation available to be purchased by his fellow man, but he isn't now getting more money with which to purchase the recreation. See, these little tiny factors will enter into his life, and although he hasn't watched it at all, he sees this level statistic and doesn't realize he's in a state of emergency. Well, how does he get out of the state of emergency? Obviously, ask Mr. Wilson, economize. Oh, you treat it as a state of affluence, huh? Look, whether he knows it or not, he is acting as though he's in a state of affluence. And if he tries to follow the thing by first economizing without promoting, he's going to then get all of the consequences of emergency. If you start applying one of these condition formulas to the wrong condition, you will get into operation the consequences of the one you are applying. You see, the one you are in, it's being neglected. So that if you want to really go into an emergency, be in an emergency and apply an affluence formula. In emergency, apply affluence formula. Boy, you're in emergency. It'll crash you. Do you follow that? And all of that is hidden and out of view. We're not talking now about something that's just dreamed up or that's a good idea. This was what lay in the back of the operation of the machine, called the physical universe. If these things didn't occur, whether amongst living forms or organizations or chemicals or rocks or something like this, if these actions didn't occur one kind or another, it is very hard to see, yet they are there. Matter follows these formulas. Other things follow these formulas. You see? Now, of course, they become a little more flexible when you apply them to life, and there's a little more life can do about it. Just that it doesn't lie there like a rock and simply erode. See? Life has more volition, and so can apply the condition very definitely. So here let us take a condition of normal operation, individuals in normal operation, apparently, and then the curve no longer goes up, and it lies there level. Everybody feels secure. They all feel it's all going all right. Twitterwit and Featherbrain and company solicitors, they've always been there. See? Well, they will always be there, of course. Much to their astonishment, they wind up in the bankruptcy court. And how the devil did they get there? Because their income had never changed. How did it happen, you know? So life is very fateful, and life is very fantastic, and life is very incomprehensible. Well, they didn't know the law, and that was the real law they should have been following. Twitwit and Featherbrain and company and so forth had no business having a totally even income since 1832. It didn't do anything to improve it. It was in going into an emergency, and it will eventually react as though it's in an emergency, and because they're ignoring handling an emergency, of course it becomes a real emergency, and the next thing you know, why, there's... They don't ever know how this happens to them, by the way. There's one of the most famous bootmakers in England, Peel, went by the boards the other day. To help me, Pete, they have made boots for royalty since time immemorial. But probably Henry VIII had his boots made at Peel and Company. Fantastic. They did this fabulous job of bootmaking. They're no longer amongst us. And they blamed it on all kinds of things. They blamed it in all different directions. The funny part of it is that they're so apathetic about the whole thing, they didn't even bother to sell the name of the company. Any fool could have bought the name of the company and turned the line of Boston-made, Lynn, Massachusetts-made shoes and stamped them Peel. And that's what they did to Stetsons. You can no longer really get a Stetson. That's a Stetson. Jobs or somebody bought up Stetson, and they just stamped Stetson on the hat.
Well, they were so apathetic about this whole thing, and it was so incomprehensible to them, they just suddenly went out of business. You know?
Well, along about 1835, at the very latest, they should have started advertising. It didn't matter how many royal feet were covered by Peel boots. That royalty and so forth, I probably never even thought of giving somebody £5,000 or something like that to wear the name of the company on his boots in white letters or something, you know. I mean, however crude it was, they thought of nothing. You see? And that's how civilizations go to pieces. Civilizations that generally don't know these formulas, and they go, well, there's always been a Roman Empire. There will always be a Roman Empire. Actually, the Roman Empire went into affluence, tried to treat it as normal operation, and disappeared from the ken of man. The affluence they went into was brought about by Julius Caesar. He expanded the empire's borders fantastically, suddenly, and immediately. He also violated the normal operating procedure of the Roman Empire, which was Pax Romana, build the roads, keep them open, and keep peace everywhere, and trade with everybody, and rule nobody, to hell with them. And that was the way the Roman Empire was doing. It was doing all right. It had been going like that for a long time. All of a sudden, this bird comes along and gets the idea of conquest. He was doing a rehearsal for Hitler or somebody. And he gets this idea that the thing to do is expand the borders and get rich and make everybody rich and make everybody rich suddenly without any basic structuring. So, oh my God, he was taking in this area, that area, and the other area. This very area right here was tremendously affected by this nut. It was typical, by the way, of I was telling you the other day about how they follow people who haven't got good sense. There was an epileptic homosexual, God Almighty. My boy. I don't have anybody to listen to him, I don't know. But you're probably not aware of the fact that the main battles fought for the possession of the British Isles were fought just a few miles from St. Hill here over in the Ashdown Forest. They're just over the hill over here. Well, this nut did such things as take the British Isles, which for years and years, decades, had been getting Roman pottery and Roman cloth and Roman coins and the old Phoenician tin ship line and so forth was coming into the south here. They were in trade, don't you see? And this channel over here, you could jump across it if you felt not too heavy one day. And the stuff had been coming over from Europe. And the British Isles here were in very close communication with the, quote, Roman Empire, unquote. The civilization was very nice, and they were very enamored with this new civilization. It looked new to them. And they, for instance, had an older civilization they were going on, which you found remnants of in Ireland. Well, it was over here very strong. It had wicker chariots and things like this. And that this new civilization looked good to them. That pottery looked good, and those togas, they looked real good, and so forth. And they actually would have lined up on the shore, the way people do occasionally as Scientologists in a group. You know, they want to know all about it. You know, what is all this, you know, and so on. If you haven't got a suppressive present, why, they get you talking for hours. The British would have lined up on the beach down here if they'd heard the Romans were coming over to show them how to fix up a few things, you know. I would have said, hurrah, you know, hello, how are you, you know, gosh, you know, I've been waiting for you for a long time. Me, I know some Latin, listen, you know, pax vobiscum, you know. No, this nut Caesar, he gets some little baskets or something they call ships and sails across this, and he lands on the beach in a hostile battle array and got to find somebody to fight, and he finds some people to fight. And of course, they fought him because it looked sure like an invasion. He had himself a ball, and then for some hundreds of years, while you had this country stumbling along and trying to intervene in the politics of the Roman Empire and outside the Roman Empire, but inside the Roman Empire, and occasionally running the Roman Empire. Oh, wow. Affluence. He all of a sudden got this tremendous quantity of territory, tremendous quantities of peoples, did it all wrong way too, didn't deliver really. He gave them slavery, not Roman civilization. They didn't treat it by the formula of affluence. They just squandered the wealth of the empire on this so-called conquest of new wealth, and that was the end of the Roman Empire. And after that, certain other political factors existed in the world. So the Chinese, by the way, about the year one, licked the Russians. That's not well known, but Russians haven't publicized it. They've said more about inventing TV than they have about that fixture. But the Chinese licked them. And it fought them down to a nub, and they retreated, the Russians did, and they actually vacated and evacuated all of Siberia. And the Chinese drove them straight down into what is now the Urals and so forth. Boy, they were running, and they were running hard, you know. They were scared. And they were sufficiently powerful, even so. China was at the height of her civilized might, you see. But that was the real thing that occurred in the year zero. It wasn't Christ. It was this cataclysm. And in went the Chinese, and out went the Russian people, and they hit over into this area of Poland. And they kept hitting against that area. And they took all the peoples that were in the area of Poland and Central Europe and so on, and that actually had been on this side of the Urals and so on. And those people were just forced out of their homeland by these new people that had been chased down, defeated by the Chinese. And those people then migrated south, and they kept migrating in waves and fighting and so forth, and they were actually streams of refugees, and they kept crossing the Danube and so forth. And the Roman, he didn't know what this was all about. If he'd been smart, he would have treated this as a new affluence of some kind or another. He wouldn't have fought these people. They, frankly, were not in a warlike state of mind. They were defeated. They had been defeated by the peoples the Chinese had defeated, you see. They were without household goods or bread or any other doggone thing, and they were coming down in streams. And then they'd get organized somewhere up around the German forests or somewhere down into France somewhere, and they would form into an area that was trying to find some way out. And the Roman Empire barred their retreat from these Russians that had been chasing them out. And that actually is apparently the real basis of the things like the Vandals and other erasures of Roman history. These birds were just driven down on the empire. And they had all sorts of wild adventures and so forth, but it wiped it out. But the Roman by that time, he couldn't stand up to anything. He probably could have handled these people politically if he'd still been operating on his old basis of Pax Romana. He'd still been trying to keep the peace and keep the roads open. He would have said, yeah, well, there's a lot of country over there that doesn't have anybody in it. Why don't you people go over there, you know? Something like that. Instead of that, he had to hold down this phony empire that Julius Caesar had put together that gave him boundaries. Up to that time, he'd owned the whole world without putting any signposts on it. Don't you see? Julius Caesar went out and gave him affluence by putting up some signposts saying, this is Roman territory. So they couldn't handle these barbarian invasions, and they're no longer with us. I don't know if you haven't noticed recently, but I noticed in the last war that nobody was ever very worried about being faced by Italian troops. broke their backs. Now, these various conditions, and they're historically, was a huge condition of affluence which was begun and which wound up appetite over tin cup. Now, furthermore, the Russians didn't do all right on their defeat because they went into an emergency but didn't promote. See? They didn't follow any kind of a formula. Well, you have to dream up what they'd have to do, you see. They would have had to have promoted something. Or, we are useful to you Chinese, don't you see? Or, people of the Balkans, we come in peace, you know, or something. All they did was just walk out there defeated, and everybody they ran into cut his head off, you know. They didn't know much about formulas. But you can get yourself in one of the most remarkable appetite over tin cup states that you ever cared to be in your life. Just apply the wrong formula to your own personal existence. This doesn't just apply to big organizations, big civilizations. It applies to the individual. You go into one of these conditions, you're in it without knowing. You've got to be in one or another of these conditions, you see. There isn't any other there isn't this thing of no condition. And you're in one or another of them, and the funny part of it is a state of emergency. You know, a state of emergency continued is still a state of emergency, only it's worse. And that state of emergency not recovered from with no emergency formula ended is worse. And then that condition is continued, and so forth, it's worse. There is no condition of emergency over because everything is dead. That's one of the horrible things to look at in this universe. But nothing ends. You could probably take any PC and get the tail end of some duel he had at some unimaginable point of the past, and you find out to some degree the duel is still going on. It's quite interesting. He never really gave up. He was killed in the duel, but he never really gave up. The total persistence of the universe is one of the most amazing features of it. It will persist. Survival of anything and everything is the God watchword by which it functions. So what about this guy? He's in a condition of emergency and he used to be a bank president, becomes clerk. All right, he's in a condition of emergency and he doesn't repair that as a clerk, so he becomes a Skid Row bum. Well, he's still in a condition of emergency and he doesn't repair that, so he becomes negative Skid Row bum. And then he goes down to a point where he still can't can't even pick up a body or function in any way whatsoever, so he's still in a condition of emergency. At no time along the line does he pull out of this condition of emergency. He's still trying to handle it as the wrong condition or something like that. You wonder what the dwindling spiral is. It's really just applying the wrong formula to an existing situation. And that'll give you a dwindling spiral every time. And the handiest one to go into, of course, is emergency. Because when the others aren't repaired or handled properly, why, emergency then occurs. That's why we know far more about emergency than the other states. Now, there's a condition of power change. I might as well tell you the other two conditions. The first one is the state of emergency. The next one is the state of normal operation, parenthesis, stability, but don't be fooled by the word thinking it's level. The next one is a state of affluence. And the next one is a state of power change. And the state of power change is the where you have a company running all right, let us say, but the general manager has been hired by some other company because he has such a successful record. Now, this is one of the most mishandled states anybody ever heard of. You know, you get that cliche, the new broom sweeps clean. But it doesn't only sweep clean, man, it just sweeps everything out. You're always getting a condition whereby Mr. Sykes has taken over now in the main central bank. And he has left the branch bank where he has been so successful. And his job is taken over by Bill Smithers. and Bill Smithers moves into this little local branch position, and the new broom sweeps clean. He violates the formula almost always. And it just seems to be sewn into his makeup to knock it off. And it's just ignorance, you see. Well, he makes changes. Now, look, the little bank must have been doing all right if its boss was able to take off to become a manager of a bigger bank. Must have been doing okay, huh? Well, if that little bank was doing all right, and if it was in a state of normal operation, which it normally would have been in, for anybody to have been promoted out of it, this new bird coming in, actually, life is a beautiful song if he follows the condition formula, and that's perfectly easy. You just don't change anything. Power change. Don't change anything. Just because power has changed, don't change anything. Now, look, it applies to the individual on the basis that the new manager of this little district bank, the new manager of the little district bank, has been, previous to that, the chief cashier. Well, he's had a power change, see? He's from chief cashier to manager of a little local bank. Well, what do they normally do? What does Wad normally do when he runs into this situation? Well, you know very well. The wife has to have a bigger house, and they have to have a better car, don't they? That's obvious. He's got to be the part, hasn't he? He's got to have more better clothes to live up to this. It's obvious. He's got to have a better front, you know. And they have to have more social affairs, make more social contacts, don't they? Which makes it less possible for anybody to get his job done, don't you think? Also runs up a nice bill of expenses on entertainment and all this sort of thing. But if it were only that, it would simply be the individual violating it. He goes ahead and violates the formula for the local bank. Well, it's always irritated him, the fact that he has had to say, "Good morning, Governor," or something when the manager came in, you see. This has always irritated him, and he hasn't got any better sense than to alter the operating procedure. So when he comes in, he doesn't let his new chief cashier say, "Good morning, Governor," don't you see? He decides that this had better be that he has met in the office with most of the papers of the day. So the chief cashier is supposed to be in the office with most of the papers of the day. But he never gets a chance then even to hang up his hat. He's hit with all the papers, don't you think? And he gets all the chit-chat of the bank before he can even breathe. So this makes him a little bit sore, so he gets mean to people in his immediate vicinity and spoils the morale. See? So people make a few more mistakes than they ordinarily would have made in adding up the figures. And then there's this new rule about the tea break. He has decided that he had better put the tea break from woof woof to woof woof. See, and this is a big change, and then there's another change, there's another change, there's another change, there's another change. The new broom is busy sweeping a blank clean of being any bank. And the next thing you know, there's no bank. See, its statistic goes So you want to ask, why is it when they have moved off Bill Smithers to become the head of the whole chain, do they have such a hell of a time replacing him in the local area? Well, it isn't that the guys that replace him are stupid or incapable of doing the job or something. It's just they don't know this formula. Well, what a song it is to inherit a pair of successful boots. That is really a song. There's nothing to it. Just step in the boots and don't bother to walk. And this is somehow or another considered by people reprehensible, you see. You're supposed to strike out on your own. You're supposed to put your own personality on the bull. Put on the boots, but don't walk, man. You just sit around for a while. Just sit around, and people want things signed. You know immediately that you're going to get all of the pressure points in the organization are going to come to you at once. And the fellow who had it before you had all these pressure points, we must have resisted them successfully because they still exist. So anybody wants anything signed that your predecessor didn't sign, don't sign it. That's an easy rule to follow, isn't it? This absolutely is the laziest position that anybody could ever occupy, and that's the only way it can be occupied, with total laziness. Don't do anything. Keep your eyes open. Learn the ropes. And depending on how big the organization is after a certain time, why, see how it's running and run it as normal operating condition. If it's not in anything but a normal operating condition, just apply the normal operating condition to it. Go around and, besides the little routine that's done, why, go around and snoop around and find out what made it a little bit better that week, you know, and reinforce that, and what worsened a little bit, and take that out that made it worse, you see, and just snip around. By that time, you're so well acquainted with the operation. You know everybody by his first and last names, and you know this, that, and the other thing, and you know where all the papers are, and you know the favorite dodges, and you've seen all these things happen, don't you think? And frankly, the operation will just keep on moving on up. And it would move ahead very successfully, because quite normally, there are only two kinds of replacements. Only two circumstances, not conditions, but there are only two circumstances which require replacement. The very successful one or the very unsuccessful one. So the place was probably not in a condition of affluence. It was probably in a condition of very steady normal operation for a long time, which eventually came to the fifth one, which is power. And the fifth condition, unless there is some other condition I've overlooked in it, is power. Condition of power. Now, this fellow, in operating this bank, had operated under normal operating conditions, coped with all of its emergencies, didn't go bluey in all the affluences and so forth, and he finally got into a position where he himself had assumed a position of power in the eyes of his own superiors. See, he must be quite a bloke. He must be extending the activities of his organization all around, and he is operating at a position of where, for instance, power, well, somebody asked him for his position or opinion on something, and he says so-and-so and so-and-so. Well, his position of power is simply that they say, oh, yes, well, that's the way it is. Even his superiors, you see. In other words, the operation was running so well and so forth, he eventually found himself in a position of power, and so the reason he gets promoted is, of course, he's outgrown the zone that power matches, so they move him up to a higher power position. Quite elementary in its actual look. He'd inevitably move up to a higher power position anyway. And when he does so, he would leave, of course, an operation which was in a position of power. That would be its actual condition. Quite normally, when the fellow is promoted creditably, then the organization he leaves behind must be in a condition of power. If the organization is in a condition of emergency, well, then God knows what you do. Now, the fellow who walks into the boots of somebody who has left it in disgrace, very often there are two or three replacements before they finally set it down and stabilize it, because every one of these guys they try to act. Maybe in the last job they had, they inherited a condition, you see, of normal operating condition. See? And they found out they didn't have to do anything, and it all came off all right. So the next one they inherit, they inherit it's in a condition of emergency. And statistics have gone to hell, causing the boss to be fired. So they decide not to do anything, you see. Ooh. No. All he's got to do when he inherits one in emergency is nothing extraordinary. It's just apply the state of emergency formula to it, which is immediately promote. All statistics down. Oh, well, let's see. What do we normally produce around here? We produce eggs. All right, eggs. Good. Who do we use for advertising? We got an advertising manager or an accountant any place? Any firm that advertises for us? They say, well, Smythe and Company has been our advertising firm for the last 100 years. Oh, wait a minute. This organization's in emergency. Smythe. Well, we're going to get a new one. But meanwhile, Smythe and Company can turn out this campaign, and I'll also get somebody else to turn out a campaign, too. Smythe and Company, get out the standard campaign, the one that last produced a lot of egg selling. Now repeat that whole campaign. But the fellow said, well, you mean you wanted the girls with the bows on their hair? I don't care whether they have bows on their hair or not. Just repeat the campaign. That was the last point of success. So get that one out quick. Can you get that out anytime we're in the next, I'll give you lots of time. You've got until yesterday. Well, the fellow says that you haven't paid your last account and so forth. Well, that's something else. I haven't got anything to do with that, neither you. The only chance you ever got to get your account paid, son, is just to get out that advertising campaign flash and so forth. And you don't get out the advertising campaign flash, why, you lose our account, and you're also going to lose your bill. So take your choice. And say, he speaks sooth. So they get a promote out, don't you see? And he meanwhile gets a hold of another firm that's going to replace this other firm. And he says, get out an egg campaign. Right away, sell lots of eggs. And the fellow said, we've always had an idea about selling an egg campaign. We have a radio ad, and this rooster comes in and winks, you see. And you say, how's he going to wink on the radio? Well, they say, well, we had it work with good. Put on the whole program. That's right. That's it. Fine. And the board of directors, a bunch of old fuddy-duddy something, is sitting around saying, but how are you going to pay for all this? Pay for it. See, they're trying to put the emergency formula into the affluence formula. Well, fine. I'll give you a complete memorandum on that. I'll give you a memorandum on that by next Monday. Yes, sir. Yeah, we'll give you a complete memorandum on the whole thing. Grace, copy something out of an economics textbook or something, would you? All right, very good. Now, he also handles that by promote. He's going to give him something. Don't you see? And then after he's got this firm over here putting on the last successful campaign, he's got a new firm that is going to take their position if the new firm succeeds. When he's got all that promotion out, then he sits down at his desk and works all night long every night and gets out the promotion that's going to save the bacon. Got the idea? On all lines, regardless of any expense. And then he makes sure that it happens. And the next thing you know, that organization's curve starts going up. Elementary. Sometimes it takes longer, sometimes it's sooner, sometimes you hold your breath for a long time, your promotional period is just week after week after week. Oh my God, that last promotion didn't bite. Let's get something new here, let's get something going. You know, keep it up until you all of a sudden see the statistics start to recover and then economize. And then just say, all right, no purchase orders, nothing, nobody can have anything. No, I don't can't pay any bills, I'm awfully sorry. Nobody can pay any bills, I mean, no, I can't buy anything. You say they're going to cut off the water tomorrow, well, I don't know how we'll bathe. Just shut it off right there. And then, say, where the hell, we haven't even thought of this up to this point. Now, where are we going to get some eggs? Horribly enough, it's the only possible way it can be done. If you work it in reverse and worry about getting the eggs before you sell any eggs, you're going to go crash in this universe before you have an opportunity. Don't you see? So now you've got a new, fantastic and frantic condition which you're now going to have to enter in on. Where are we going to get the eggs? Well, I thought you knew, Joe. No, I didn't know. Big conference with juniors. Are there any eggs? Somebody says, well, they're Irish eggs. Nobody's ever sold those over here before. Oh, yeah. Irish eggs. I thought we had lots of eggs. Oh, no. You forgot the thing that caused the emergency and that sort of thing was because hen bite got loose amongst the hens and they all died. Oh, is that so? But you see now, it requires real frantic, fast operating skill with which to get a supply. And if you're very, very clever, why, the first order that comes in from the big wholesaler for eggs, you immediately feel it. How that happened is a concatenation of miracles. But you feel it. You make good there because your next thought is to prepare to deliver. And in the lag, when your promotion was going out and everything else, in that lag, you were actually able then to prepare to deliver. See? So your conference was with your juniors and so forth. They got lots of eggs in Ireland. They haven't been able to sell any eggs in Ireland in some time. You know, there used to be a tariff, and they more or less got uncustomary to import eggs from Ireland and so forth there. And they don't use them anymore. Why? Well, because they're brown eggs. Oh, yeah. Well, I thought they're brown eggs. Well, how white eggs. Let's see. Eggs are white and brown. All right. Very good. And housewives have anything against white eggs? Well, no. As a matter of fact, they used to have a superstition that brown eggs were healthier and made better cakes or something. In old cookbooks, you used to see occasionally brown egg, you know, you use 6 brown eggs for this particular type of present. No kidding. And they're brown eggs in Ireland. All right, good. We got all of that propaganda going. We got all that campaign going and so forth. We will release another propaganda campaign now that brown eggs, and we'll quote old Betty Kettlebottom's recipe for brown eggs. Yeah, we'll fix that up. And here we go. And we'll get in the Irish eggs. And the wholesaler calls up and he says, say, those eggs you just shipped us, they're brown eggs. You say, there's no additional charge. They're not dyed, they're natural. No, are they? Except the brown eggs. That's how the universe goes together, and that's what fast management of an existing area is. And anybody, by knowing these formulas, actually could apply them to his personal life in a very wonderful fashion. I'll repeat them again for you. There's the condition of emergency, the state of emergency. Same thing. The normal operation of affluence, state of affluence, sudden peaks of income. And power change, where the guy comes off, and the last one is power. And the condition of power. And the condition of power change merely means the old boss and the new boss. I can play hob. Very often we have gotten into this in Scientology because I've left an operating area and it's been taken over by somebody else. We've gotten into a condition of power change. And instead of sitting back quietly, why, whoever inherited the boots changed some of the things that I had going, don't you see? They didn't reinforce them, and the area would go bleep, and they couldn't quite tell why it had gone down so fast, and it attributed to my magic personality. Well, there might have been something to that, I will have to admit, but actually it wasn't actually attributable to that at all. It was that during the time I was there, I had certain operating lines moving, and nobody kept those same lines moving exactly the way I kept them moving, and of course, power change. Somebody else took over the control of that immediate area. Why, they'd move those lines. They'd make changes. They wouldn't keep those lines flowing. If the guy had been very clever, he would have gone through the exact same routine of every day that I went through. He would have signed nothing that I wouldn't sign. He wouldn't have changed a single order. He would look through the papers that had been issued at that period of time. These are the orders that are extant. And he just would have gotten busy as the devil just enforcing those orders. And his operation would have increased and increased and increased and increased. Now, when an operation, then after I leave, it does collapse, you know, it goes downhill. It doesn't ever completely collapse, but it goes downhill. Then you know very well what happened after I left. Somebody changed all the orders. It wasn't the public responded badly or something like that. It's just somebody must have shifted all of the orders. That's all. It's very elementary. You can trace it very easily, see? But the condition of power is quite interesting, and that, of all of them, is the most fascinating. Not because one is particularly power-happy, but because it is peculiar. It's peculiar in that it apparently belies what you would normally think or expect to do as a operating Satan. Because that is a condition of power. And moving up into that condition of power, you have to follow its formulas. Now, I've written its formulas down. I'm not going to try to quote those formulas to you at the present moment. I don't have the full list and I might tell you a little bit wrong. But I will tell you this about it, is what you mustn't do is disconnect. Now, isn't that peculiar? That's the first law of a condition of power, is don't disconnect. That will bring about catastrophe for both you and anybody else. Now, look at what might happen. Here we have an operating Scientology organization. You can see it organizationally very easily. And it's operating pocket to pocket to pocket to pocket to pocket to pocket to pocket. And after a while, some of the boys get the idea, why are we demanding any money from preclears? After all, we've been operating in this area for some time. Only our currency is used in this area. Why charge anything? Furthermore, we can mock up and put in place and haul in from the granite quarries outside the town all the building material we want. Why are we buying anything? See? And a bunch of these birds get pretty eager beaver and they start to do it themselves. And then they say, well, we really don't have to have any students or preclears. And it's the violation of that formula alone which brought about implanting, trapping, and an antagonism toward Satan. Violation of the state of power. And the first thing it is don't disconnect. You'll find out that people whine and complain about this. How about the big boy who becomes the big boy, and he's been a local boy in some town, and all of a sudden he becomes a big boy, and he's highly powerful on Wall Street. And he never again speaks to any of his friends in the old hometown. Jesus, those people resent that. That is so much the matter of the thing that I can tell you personally that it's almost impossible to speak to them. That is, say, if you've been in an area where you've been very well known, and you suddenly become, become a celebrity or something like that, these people won't believe that you want to talk to them. You see, they're so used to having a formula violated. You get the idea? You'll find that you've been to St. Hill and you're in the org, and you go back, and you've always had a good time talking to Josie Ann, and so the receptionist, and so forth, and you find out that although she'll chatter with you and that sort of thing, she has a feeling like you're quite superior now. It's going to be you who has to break down the communication barrier has erected. You find out that very often these people have drifted off from you. And you wait until you've gone through seven, and you've gotten yourself well up the line on clear, and you can handle power processes, which gives you total dominion over any type of case there is. And we haven't talked about your state of case. We just talked about what you can do and the reputation of what you've got or what you are. Just that, see? We're not talking about you being able to do anything beyond your business, see? Wow! One of your hardest jobs will be not disconnecting. You'll find out there are certain people around who are now absolutely sure that you don't any longer want to talk to them. And you start communicating with these people, and they will give you some of the weirdest reactions. Some of them splash back at you. Some of them are too respectful of you. Some are very propitiative of you. Your conversation quite commonly starts out with, oh, I thought you would have forgotten all about me. This is quite weird, see? In other words, beings in the universe fully expect that you're going to violate the first position of the power condition, which is disconnect. They think you're going to disconnect. Well, let's suppose this organization got itself so that it was totally self-sufficient. It didn't have to train anybody. It didn't have to process it for anybody. It didn't have to do a thing. Next thing you know, this community, anywhere around it, is going to think of nothing but implantation, stakes, violating any freedom that a Satan might have. They're going to become very suppressive. They're being denied service for one thing. No bridge was put in. one of the most dangerous things we could do, if we just wanted to blow up everybody in this room, there is one terribly dangerous thing that we could do. We could just not make what we know available. For instance, to have the power process being performed at St. Hill, and let's limit them totally to staff at St. Hill. Somebody's going to get upset. Well, they get upset enough when you don't let everybody do them. You're not willing to sit still, you see, and watch somebody out in keel cut process somebody into the ground because nobody star rated him on the bulletin, don't you see? Because we have no way of star rating somebody in keel cut on these bulletins. So we keep it corralled just to that degree, and you'll see a little bit of natter. But actually, the public at large and so forth, in responding to me on this question, quite well accepts the idea that certain of these materials, the stronger, tougher these materials, should be in trained hands. They think that's a good idea. And that's as far as we go. Yes, we say they should be in very trained hands, and that we should have an ethics of their proper application. That's not the only thing that worries people. They're still available, don't you see? People can still get these things and so forth. We haven't disconnected. Supposing I announced, well, I walked across the bridge now, and I've given you some materials and so forth, and I'm leaving. I've got an appointment at the Central Galaxy and so forth. It's about time I reported back anyway. I've got to collect my back pay. You'd see some wild things occurring. You'd be just a little bit amazed at how wild they would be. You'd say, well, it doesn't make much sense, because after all, he's given us all the material, and he's done all this, and he's all done that, and so on. And so I said, well, I'm clear now, and I'm moving on up to OT, and so forth. I hope, wish you people some luck. Bye. Back in the old days when I would never get discouraged particularly, but I'd just get to thinking about my own concerns and that sort of thing. I told some people, I'm not going to be around forever and so forth. And I said, several people immediately break down and cry and get upset, and a couple others get angry and so forth. A very mis-emotional mess. Do you see? No, power, position of power, don't disconnect. Even though you're promoted to general from colonel of the regiment, don't be such a fool as to think that you can totally disconnect from that regiment. Because the only way you can't disconnect from the regiment is to disconnect from it. You can't just deny your connections. What you've got to do is take ownership and responsibility for your connections. Now, the condition of power is the guy going into the condition of power, or the organization going into the condition of power. Now, the condition of power change, that state, is actually a fellow assuming a condition which has been held from power. You get the difference. You're replacing Bill, who was in a condition of power. He was actually in a condition of power. Now, when he moves off, disconnects, when he's gone, then the power change is who took over. You see? That applies to taking over a post. You see, or the upgrade of the power of an organization also is covered under that same formula, weirdly enough. And then, this post up here, the assumption of the state of power, so forth, governed by its own formula. And the first thing it's got to do is make a record of all of its lines. And that's the only way it will ever be able to disconnect. Now, for instance, you were very, very successful. I'll show you, this applies big and small. See? Supposing you were very, very successful. You were a very, very successful receptionist in an organization. And you were so successful that you were made the registrar. See? Something like this one. Well, actually, that is an upgrade of power, isn't it? Now, you don't permit the person who takes over the post to operate in a condition of power change unless you make a total record of your post. So on a condition of power, the first thing you have to do is write up your whole post. And you'll find out if you don't write up your whole post, you're going to be stuck with a piece of that post since time immemorial. And a year or so later, somebody will still be coming to you, asking you about that post which you occupied. Because you didn't write up your post. Do you see? So you made it possible for the next bloke in, whether he does or not, that's beside the point, but you made it possible for the next fellow in to assume that state of power change, of changing nothing, because you've shown what was there. So he knows now what not to change. You got it? But if you didn't write it up, then he could change it, and you're being pulled back to that post continuously. And that's the surest way in the world to be snapped in against some old post that you have held. And that's how never to get away from the post. You just don't write up the post of reception and go ahead and take the post of registrar. And don't be very surprised, however, if you spend 50% of your time answering the telephone while being a registrar. And you say, what wonderful mechanics are involved here. These new people that take over these reception posts, they're just girls and they're no good and they don't care. Now, let's make sure before we start being too critical. Did we ever write up this post registrar? Did we ever really leave the post? Did we leave it in a condition that it could be left? And then, did we just negate the whole post after we left it? Or occasionally, did we walk by and say, how's the post coming? Okay. It's no sudden disconnection, man. That's what it really amounts to. Don't go disconnecting. This is one of the most foul tricks that this universe plays at this particular time, is permit death. They have a thing called the last will and testament. And that's a bequeathment. Who the hell cares about the bequeathment? How about the bird's lines? See? This guy is the school janitor. And he said, well, the world can get along without the school janitor and so forth. And it's not important and, you know. And he kicks the bucket, and I leave my Sunday suit to the garbage man, you know. And he thinks he's done his job, see. How's he get a time track? He just never wrote up the hat of janitor so it could be occupied. In other words, he didn't take responsibility for his former situation. Not having taken responsibility for it, he stuck with it. It was his former position. And he didn't take responsibility for it, so of course he stuck with it. Naturally. He should have written up, instead of the last will and testament, he said, oh, I've got TB now, and I'm kicking the bucket, and the doctors have promised me that they're going to kill me in a few days. What should I do? You know, what should he do? There's only one answer, man. There's only one answer. He better write up his post. It isn't whether or not he's in a condition of power change or not. He's in a condition of power with relationship to the janitor. See? He may be doing poorly personally and may be in another personal condition. He may be personally in a condition of emergency, but as far as his post is concerned, he's in a position of power. He is the janitor. And he just ought to get that old stub of a pencil and that old account book and sit down and lie down and somehow or other get himself comfortable enough to say, you empties the ashes every Tuesday, and you'll find the fuse on switch box number 17. It's always blowing. Responsibility is write the thing up and get it into the hands of the guy who's going to take care of it. Now, if the other guy doesn't take care of it, that's his track, brother. That's not yours. Do all you can to make the post occupiable. Sooner or later, somebody's going to come along and occupy the post properly. Condition of power change, that might go appetite over tin cup two or three times. So if somebody sees this old count book, what's this? Well, that's old Sammy's write-up of his job. Oh, switch box number 17 to 16 goes on. Well, I'll be a son of a gun. It does, too, eh? Where's this? Every Tuesday. That's the best title. Oh, good. Of course, this stuff about the hot water doesn't apply. We've had a new boiler since. Well, we had to have a new boiler because they didn't apply the old hat. You get the idea. So one, in his own personal life, in the operation of a post, a state of an organization, a state of a family, state of a civilization, or state of a planet, or a sector, well, of course, all comes under the heading of the states of condition. And if they're in one state of condition, operate into another, they for sure will fail. These will be issued in the not-too-distant future in the form of a very exact bulletin giving you a number of exact steps for every one of them. There are quite a few steps, one right after the other. And they can be applied by cross-relating them to an individual. They'll be written up mainly for an organization, of course. But they can be applied crossways to that. And one of these days, students, not too different future, I think probably by Tuesday of next week, the students will be declared in a condition of emergency if their statistic goes down. That's the statistic of the number of passes. So you got less examination and more statistics, you see. Your statistic goes down, and that's what determines whether or not you go to review. State of emergency, don't you think? What do you have to do in a state of emergency? Well, it's covered exactly in the state of emergency, and you find out if you follow the state of emergency, well, you come out at the other end smiling and smelling like a rose. There's a wonderful fact that those things did exist, and they do regulate existence, regulate life, and that life can therefore be followed. But I invite you to do one thing after these are issued and you get an opportunity to study them. I invite you to do one thing, and that is take some existing civilization aspect. Take the course of existence of some government and estimate that government's state. Find out what state that government really is in, and then watch the newspapers for the measures which that government is taking. You're going to stitches. Contained in these is why the British Empire has become smaller. Every time they went into a state of emergency or a state of affluence, then they would assume the wrong formula. And the second that they assumed the wrong formula, of course, they'd emerge at the other end of the situation smaller. That's always the case. If you want to become smaller, just always apply the wrong condition. Apply the wrong formula. And you get it every time. Now the United States has got a bunch of formulas going right now. I don't know what they're operating on at the present time. But it's quite interesting. It's quite interesting. It would be, rather, quite interesting mental exercises to estimate what condition are they in. What should be the assigned condition? Now, that's the assigned condition. What's the formula? All right, the formula is so-and-so. Well, what are they doing? And you'll generally find out they're in some other wild condition that had nothing whatsoever to do with the condition that they're in. And then you wonder why statesmen fail and wars happen and things get worse and civilizations go by the boards and why the Dominican Republic flag will be flying over the White House any day now. Anyway, I think you can have some fun with this. But much more important than this, you could probably set yourself up as a business advisory bureau that would actually bring out of the woods any failing business in the world. You could set yourself up as an advisor, just using these states and doing nothing but urge that they be taken, don't you think? Boy, they'd think, how wise you are, don't you think? And how does he know those things? And once, if we did this, then we would supplant. I'm not advising anybody to do this, just a guy. We use it operationally ourselves. But a fellow by the name of Keynes, Lord Keynes, is the top dog in today's economics. And he only has one law, and that's increase want. That's his law. Increase want. And I've worked that out economically. If you increased want, if you wanted to really increase want, you just have to starve everybody to death, and you would have reached and attained the end product of Lord Keynes' central law. As far as I can see, that's about as far as anybody has gotten on states of condition in modern civilization. I hope we can do a bit better. Thank you very much.